Blog Talk Radio.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It's Empowerment Saturday. It's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's your main man, Marvin Rome, coming to you once again live for another show. Let's get started. Right now. There is no better love. There is no better love for self and kind. And the more that we can love ourselves, the more that we can love our kind, the more that we can come back to the middle, to balance, to finding out what it is that we need to do in order to become motivated, inspired, and empowered. And that is what the NAAEA is all about. It's the National African American Empowerment Association, and this is Empowerment Saturday, and I welcome you to another Saturday, and I thank you for joining us live for another candid conversation with African Americans, by African Americans, for African Americans. And guess who will be the ones to solve our problems for us? Yes, you guessed it, us. And it's by doing those things that we know we need to do to, like I said before, get back to the middle. So what is the NAAEA is all about? It's about empowerment. It's about political. It's about economic. It's about athletics, which is health, wellness, fitness, nutrition, culture, and education. It's a comprehensive education that we need to learn the systems of the system that's impacting us. So if you want to know about white supremacy, you need to learn about it. And then you have an effective tool. It's just like a good matador with a good red cape, being able to olay that bull whenever it comes charging. So today, our series is going to continue with the wake-up series, and we need to wake up to some things. So we're going to talk about reimagining the black family, what that looks like. What would that look like in the future if our families are intact and we're stable and we have a good foundation for cause and action, how to treat each other and how to love each other and how to respect each other and how to be the best people that we can be? Because I dare say, and I'll say it again, the people who came over here on those ships and the people that Plymouth Rock landed on have been altered. My main man, Stan Macklin, are you available?
I'm here, my brother. Great introduction to the radio program. We're just so excited to be able to know that this platform is here for you and for the opportunity to grow and to enhance our perspectives as Africans that happen to be born in America. So we're glad to be on today's show.
Great, great. So I'll start with you. In terms of reimagining the black family, because I've observed your family system and your family operation, what do you feel, as we discuss this, are the key elements to reimagining the black family? Mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And you talk about every show about institutions that define our own reality. So we're going to talk about the family institution. And then we'll also have a potluck so our listeners will be able to chime in as they feel. Right? This is a safe space for us to have dialogue about what we see, what we feel, and what we believe in, because every person is coming from their own experiences and their own lens. What you got, Stan?
Well, Brother Ron, as I stated earlier, it's a great topic from the standpoint that when we think about having institutions that define our reality, we must start with the family. I was very fortunate to have been born into a caring family, a two-parent home, working father, who was really old school and, as we say, like a sergeant snorkel, very strong in disciplinarian ways. And I had a very loving, caring mother. And the two of them, they nurtured us and they raised us. And we learned a lot. And then within that basic unit there, my brothers and sisters, it was eight of us all together, seven brothers and one sister, and she happened to be the caboose. We really got a chance to interact with each other, learn a lot of things about negotiation and democracy. And of course, there's always fussing and fighting going on. It's what you do in families. But I come from a family where we even had a place during summertime when school was out. My father had a farm. He had 10 acres outside of the city. And, boy, we did everything out there. We raised crops and learned that nobody died from sweat and developed a strong work ethic. And so I always had that. And so I always wanted to model that when I became of age to be able to step out into to experience that reality for my own, which I did at a very young age. At the age of 18, married my high school sweetheart. I have that basic foundation there. But when the opportunity came for me to go to the motherland, I always had a desire to wanted to know about the origin and these people who look like who I look like and met them when they came here to America. But I wanted to be able to go there and to see. And my, when I actually had the opportunity to go that first time, it just blew my mind. It confirmed a couple of things. Number one, it confirmed that was a true statement that it takes a village. I saw the village in operation. I saw that the village was the hybrid of unity within that structure, and how the chief and the village council, and they just, you know, everybody worked together. And the people in, it was kind of like the people in the country was countryside were trying to get to the towns, and people in the towns were trying to get to America, and people in America was trying to get to Africa. And so, but when I got mm-hmm. there, I just saw their structure. I saw how it worked. I saw how they solved their problems. And I said, I must implement this within my family structure. And I did. And so we started out things like having weekly family council meetings. We start having family prayer. Of course, family prays together, stays together. And it brought a couple things. It brought solidarity. It brought the ability that mm-hmm. everybody in our family was valued. Things such as like birthdays became big things. Everybody's birthday was special. Everybody was somebody. And when each individual had a birthday within our family structure, it became a big thing. We honored it. We honored it. And to now, even right today, it's here we are. I'm well in my 60s, and I have some kids that's in there. Well, my oldest daughter is in her. She's 49. Yeah, she's 49. And I have some in their 40s and some in their 30s, and then I have some young adults, and we go all the way down to the gamut to 6 months old and I think it's three weeks old, and yeah, 6 weeks old. And so birthdays are very important. And so what it did is just solidified our family function. So we always helped each other out as family members. And then came the part about job creation. And so what we mm-hmm. did was we started businesses to be able to sustain our family. And mm-hmm. That just took off. It just took off. And so here it was, we had created a reality that defined who we were as a people, and it was kind of like the FUBU style, from us and for us, from us and by us. And so
you started right your own economy.
Started our own economy, our own nation.
Okay.
That's what we did. That's what we did. I mean, you've seen it. You've seen it. And it's just, and it perpetuates itself. And now my kids are grown. My six grown kids, my four daughters and my two sons, they're doing the same thing. And it just naturally perpetuates itself. And we're fortunate, in spite of the challenges that confront us as African Americans. But we made it. We made it. We made it. And that's why I start saying we have to have institutions that define our own reality. Because I spent time, brother, trying to get in, to fit in, and what happened?
Mm-hmm.
People stifle you. They got all these restraints on you. You don't have the freedom because you're helping them to fulfill their dreams and their goals.
Mm-hmm.
And many times you're the last hired and the first fired. Went through all that.
Mm-hmm.
So, forget that. And so it's probably been almost 30 years that I've been working for myself.
All right.
And
all right. So what we're gonna do is, real quickly, I'm gonna switch here and I'm gonna shift over to Brother George, and he's going to give us our Willie Lynch moment because you've laid the foundation, and then we'll go to the lines and then we'll chat a bit.
Thank
all right,
you.
Brother George.
Yes, sir.
All right. Welcome. How are you?
I'm doing good, brother. I can't complain. Day is going well.
All right.
Wonderful.
Good brisk walk.
All right. All right. Give us our Willie Lynch segment. Today we'll turn it over to you.
Yes, sir. Well, I don't have my books with me, but I'm going to have to go off the top today. But
there you go.
One of the major things about Willie Lynch, well, two things, is the way that we disrespect our elders. And, the elders are going to, in most cases, have more life experience than what you have.
That's right.
And so some things that may appear to be right and exact, if you give it time, you'll find out that those things might not be. Now, had you listened to an elder might have been able to tell you that they've been playing that game for a long time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so it's like I think that you know, the young male against the old male and the young female
mm-hmm.
against the old female and vice versa, you know. I don't disrespect our young people. I give our young people the utmost respect. But
mm-hmm.
something happened within that generation.
That's right.
That they're willing to curse in front of adults.
Mm.
You know, just you know, talk in what in our time would be a disrespectful manner. And
we'll
they
see.
Feel
mm-hmm.
like that. Nothing wrong with that, you know. When
right,
when with me, you know, I think that it's something wrong. Now,
mm-hmm.
the other part that I wanted to touch on was the black male and the black female. You know
mm-hmm.
that
come on, brother.
We have to figure out a way, you know, to win
that.
Our women back. You know, we have to figure out a way to win our women back. You
mm-hmm.
know, and
yes,
maybe you know, like. You know, it's been some hard feelings from back when we allowed ourselves to be defeated, you know, 500 years ago, you know. But at some point, we have to earn the respect of our women and our children back because, you know, maybe
mm-hmm.
the disrespect from our young people is a result of the dysfunctionality between the black male and the black female, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we really need to focus on that, and it's ironic that you spoke about the realignment of the black family, which is exactly
mm-hmm.
what tore the black family apart, was that Willie Lynch theory. You know, like
mm-hmm.
I said, I don't try to debate people on whether or not it was actually, you know, a Willie Lynch or whatever. But whatever they wrote in Willie Lynch is happening with us. So
that's right.
That's the part that I argue, you know. But for today, I think that we really need to focus on improving our relationships with our women and our children, man. You know, so I'm out, brother.
Good. Thank you.
Good.
Thank you, Brother George.
Man.
Powerful.
Solid. Solid.
What you got on that, Stan? That was
solid, man.
That's enough.
Solid.
That's enough.
Man, I just like how this program flows. You know, you would think we rehearsed this here. You know, I mean, most productions you have to rehearse and know your script and everything, but this is coming from the heart. You know, as the brothers are speaking, they're meaning what they're saying, they're saying what they mean, and excuse me, and it's so important. I just want to touch on a couple of things. When he hit the elders, that's what I saw, that elder structure. That elder structure that they have there in terms of the village. It's there.
Mm-hmm.
It's there from the uttermost to the guttermost. It's there. And, I mean, even when a brother gets out of order or sister, they got that disciplinary factor there. And so we've gotten away from that here. And we need to return back to that. And how that can be recaptured, I don't know. I know one thing, that I was a young man, but now I'm an old man and getting older every day, and I enjoy it. I love it. I've never been older before. I'm learning how to be an older man. But I do know because I have silver hair, people respect that. They do. People hold the door open for me and different. Not that I'm looking for that, you know, but they're very courteous about being respectful to me. And there are people that have been taught well, that display that toward me. And I see that by the fact of being an older person. I think I'm a little older than you, Ron, and you have always respected me as an elder person. And so that's very important. The other aspect you talked about with our women, I mean, hey, you know, we had a show, and I had to just tell the sisters, apologize to the sisters for the actions of what we have done toward them and to them.
You sure did.
And we haven't been there for them like we should have. We're to be the vanguard, the first tier, you know, as shepherds would lay in front of the sheepfold. So if that wolf or bear come up there, it got to come through him to get after them sheep, and that just wasn't going to happen. That's why he had that rod. And so, you know, we haven't used our rod. We haven't been there in the gap. We haven't stood in the gap. We've been every place but standing in the gap, a God-appointed place where God answers prayer. And so relationships with a woman is very important because, I mean, I got going on 50 years, and it gets better and better. It's solid, and we've been together since was high school, and so we model that for our kids, and so it just works. That's all I can say. It really does work, but you got to work at a revelation. It don't mean you know you don't have discussions. It don't mean you don't have fussing, but this time you just let's shelf this. Let's put this on the shelf, and we'll come back to it. Sometimes you just can't keep pressing it and trying to get it resolved, to get a solution to it. It's time just to let it alone. Let it alone. And sometimes you have to, you know, just disagree. It's just where it is. And respect the individuality of who each of you are. It's so important.
Yeah.
And
that respect,
you know, the
keeps...
things you Yes, the
go
things
ahead,
you did
ahead.
To get her or him, you have to keep up those things. There's nothing wrong with
right.
saying, I love you. And outside of the three most powerful words of I love you is I don't know. What's wrong with saying I don't know? And then another big one is forgive me. There's nothing wrong. We know we got that pride, got to humble ourselves. Forgive me. Look, I was wrong. I missed it. And, you know, we just have to do that. So we got a lot of work to do. And I think we can turn the corner But as Brother George said, that will event saying, it is in effect. It is working and has been working. And it's kind of gotten us off course. It really has.
All right. Well, the brother pointed out respecting the elders, and I think that is a bridge to the foundation in terms of having the elders to participate productively in teaching and modeling was one of the things that you talk about. And most important was respect. So let's go to the lines, Stan. We're opening up the lines now. Are you ready? All right. I'm going to 8128 is the Empowerment Network, Marvin Roan and Stan Macklin. You're live.
Go ahead, caller.
Okay. 8128. How
are
you doing, my brother?
I'm doing fine.
Good
How are you, brother?
Okay. You know, one of the brothers said this is such a joy to be on a network where we're talking about our issues and we're bringing back to mind things that are motivating us to want to get back to these traditions that we have established. We always had, even before we got here, and had to establish them because of our situation. You know, family was the most precious thing because it was the most elusive thing here. Okay, so once it was established, it was something that one of the brothers said, you know, establishing the farm, the the own economy, and getting back to, you know, trying to keep a solidarity in the family and you know, like praying together, eating together, resolving issues, you know, as a family. Those things went on for a while. I mean, but it seems like once we moved to the city, even though being in the city was a hit. The movement to the city did change the culture because you had to live in environments that you did not own and that you could not control.
Good point.
So those things
talk
about a lot,
excellent,
a lot of problems and a lot of separation within the family. You know, like what the brother
and
was
stress,
saying,
right?
Right, the stress, and of course we're dealing in someone else's environment. And of course, being in someone else's environment and having to play by someone else's rules does tear down the structure of something that you yourself can control. Like the brother was saying with his farm, with the family had the farm and they went into businesses. The businesses brought about small family members being involved. It's kept bringing the nucleus of the family back into itself. The way things are. In general, it brings you outside of your family. You have to learn and participate in rules that are not your own and standards that are not about you, that are about these other people. Okay? And that's where the disconnect to your heritage
comes about.
You know, because you're playing by somebody else's rules, and their rules are about you being disconnected with your heritage. Okay. They don't want you to think about you. You know,
that's
it ain't about you. It's about them.
That's
so you start instituting rules and dealing with your family, your siblings, and your spouses like as though you're one of them. And that don't fit you. It never will fit you.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
So
if it don't fit you,
so,
must acquit.
Exactly. So we're dealing with a foreign culture that not only is alien from us, but could never encompass the values that we hold precious. Okay? Because what they're about is not what we're about. It's simple as that. You know? And until we let go of embracing their standards and incorporate our own, then we're going to be continuously off balance.
That's good.
Yeah.
Go ahead, brother.
And for instance of that is the fact that each generation they attempt to erase our accomplishment and our past and even our knowledge of ourselves. each generation, there's a disconnect. There is no continuous stream of knowledge or understanding of the accomplishments we as a people have made, except for what we have produced over the most recent year. You know, those are the only ones, and the ones that were produced as they were happening, you know, after emancipation, those things
wow.
have been buried. They've been buried. So you got to go to college and then specialize in certain areas in order for you to even have access to this knowledge. You know what I'm saying? It's not coming. So, I mean, but not only have our brothers who have been writing books, but those books are not even available readily or publicized nationally. Or if they are, they're seen as being, you know, highbrow or academic research and, you know, it's like something that the common person does not have, you know, a true understanding that it is about the information is it's common information, even if it was done from a PhD stand.
Right.
And that's based on how they make us look at things as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you got to be of a certain level in order for you to be able to do this. I mean, but, you know, I don't want to monopolize the situation, but I'm saying, brother, you know, it's just us getting back to us. You know,
mm-hmm.
and finding out what I stand is by reading and researching our past, picking up a book, written by one of us. We don't have to pick up a book written by one of us. You know, because that's where we were done.
All right. Well, I'm going to hold you right there, brother. And I'll try to get back to you as we go down the line. Thank you for your comments, man. You laid a lot out there, Stanley.
Well,
laid a lot out there. And we appreciate that. Man, he covered a lot of ground. Covered a lot of ground.
Yeah.
Thank you, brother.
Reaffirmation. Right.
Man, it's so much to touch on, right? We're talking about values and standards and heritage and tradition. And we're living in a foreign culture. Man, how do we get back to the middle? Brother George said we got to win our women back.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you say, Stan? I'm sorry, I missed that.
Well, I just said we got to get back to the core of the matter. We got to. And these trying to operate in this other structure is just not designed for us. It has inbuilt sabotage because we're really trying to be something that's not us, and it just don't work. And,
be yourself.
You know, right, and if we would have had throw reality that define our own reality, say, instance, like, let's say at least 10 generations, my God. I mean, we can't even get past sometimes the second generation. Or the third
How can
generation.
You be yourself when you don't know who you are?
You don't know.
That's a question. All right, I'm going back to the lines. Hey, this is pretty good. All right, 0946, and then I'm coming right to 4756 immediately after 0946. It's the Empowerment Network. Marvin Rowan and Stan Macklin. Talk to us, caller.
Go ahead, caller.
Good afternoon. I appreciate everything that is being said and about men and women relationships. But, you know, one of the things about when you go to war, you'll never win if you don't know who the enemy is.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times it's what we don't recognize as men and women is that by design, the system has caused us not to trust one another and to be at one another, where we begin to pick one another apart. And the thing about it is, if the family system is broken, then they know they've got it. So what perfect way is, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to have men and women be against one another. And what we miss is this is by design, by white supremacy. That is our common enemy, is white supremacy, the system that says, I want the family destroyed. And so I can be a great marksman, But if my brother or sister at war with me doesn't understand who the enemy is, they could turn around and kill me. I'm doing my part, but they don't recognize, wait a minute, I'm not the enemy. You're fighting the wrong person. We are fighting the wrong person. White supremacy is the enemy. It's not one another. So it's easy for me to pick. You know, we can say, well, if women would do this or men would do that, that whole thing of what divide and conquer. If I can keep the chaos up, if I can keep the confusion up, if I can keep all the energy going in the wrong direction, then I never have to worry about you coming together, because the last thing that they want is the black man and the black woman to come together. They don't want us to come together. And so when we're talking about our issues, it's not I don't think it's helpful for the men to think it's all my fault. I don't think it's helpful for the women to think it's all our fault. We all been hoodwinked in all of this.
Right.
We all been deceived in all of this. We all been brainwashed. We've all been indoctrinated. And so I got to come in together with you and say, you know what? I've been trained to hate you. What is that about? I've been trained not to trust you. What is that about? I've been trained to look for your faults. What is that really all about? So we got to stop owning what's not ours. It's not our fault, but it is our problem. We are not in this condition. We're not in this condition because of something we did. We are in this condition because of what has been done to us. So I don't take responsibility for something that is not mine. I'm at war with my brother and sister, not because my brother ain't no good, because the system implanted in my mind, my brother ain't no good. So we can't own what is not ours. Like I said, it's not our fault, but it is our problem. So,
all right. All right. That's powerful. Thank you, sister. Wow. Stan, man.
Wow. She spoke like a true queen, man. I mean, that's just a mouthful spoken, because it is the truth. And we have allowed the dynamics of white supremacy to perpetuate itself continuously within our lives and around our lives. And she called it. And then too, I think something which you hit on a couple of programs, we have to realize that this trauma that has been going on for decades, probably centuries within us as people, and we have to not necessarily give them a pass, but realize that a victim of victimization needs the realization to know that this is something that's beyond me, that's causing me to be and do what I'm doing. But once we address that, then it's time for deliverance. I mean, it comes the time for change. And I just think our time is here. I think that the higher powers of the universe have said enough is enough. I mean, this pandemic, COVID-19 is no joke. This is real, and it's gotten the attention to the extent that it's not going to be business as usual. And I tell you, I don't know if they're going to find a vaccine or not. I mean, they haven't found no vaccine for cancer, but we've learned how to live with it. We learned how to deal with it, especially if it's not you. It's a new time, it's a new day, and for us as a people, we must return back to our original God-given position.
All right. Stan, we're going to slide back to the lines. It's Empowerment Saturday. It's 365 days of this kind of stuff. Changing your mind. We got to get it together. All right, 4756, it's Empowerment Saturday. Marvin Rowan and Stan Macklin, you're coming to us live. What you got for us?
Yeah, this is Brother Warren in New Orleans. Wake up.
My brother.
I'm the host of Yes, yes. I'm the host of New Orleans Wake Up. So we ask
right.
that you go to our show page here on Blog Talk Radio and view or listen to many of our archived shows. I just want to say I really appreciate what the sister had to say. She really got
yes.
me prepared, ready to go to war. But let me introduce this to the conversation regarding what y'all were talking about. Remember, we're under an intense attack through propaganda. Now, I'm going to do a show on, because one of the ways we've been attacked is through social media. The social media
mm-hmm.
platforms are being utilized to gain the hearts and minds of black people. Now,
got that right.
Blog Talk Radio itself is a social media platform. So let me give you some indicators that a black informant or agent may be among you. Okay, now we have all kind of informants and agents. Some of them infiltrate black militant groups,
mm-hmm.
and so on and so forth. Like we saw with Black Lives Matter. But this type of infiltration is introducing and trying to steer blacks to a right-wing agenda. So black informants are agents of racist right-wing networks to promote their white supremacist agenda, or of the FBI to infiltrate black anti-racist organizations in order to set up activities to arrest, assassinate articulate spokespersons and organizers. Please view the FBI memo entitled Black Extremist Identity in the Operation of COINTELPRO. So here goes some indicators. So let's say, because what these black informants do, they're coming to a setting like this, right? And
come on, brother.
We all concerned about issues. So these are some indicators to know you may possibly have an informant with you.
Speak,
number one, if he or she speaks negatively of black people and perpetuate stereotypes. Number two, if he or she denies that racism exists. Number three, if he or she contends that blacks are actually the racist. Number four, he or she emphasizes that black youth are criminal and immoral. Number five, if he or she denies the existence of police brutality in the black community. Number six, if he or she injects divisive topics in a black discussion to create diversion and confusion. Number seven, if he or she emphasizes that black people should not see themselves as a group. Number eight, he or she is an apologist for slaveholders and Confederate generals. They regard them as American heroes. He or she attempts to obfuscate the brutality of American slavery by bringing up African chiefs. They reject black trauma. Number 10, if he or she encourages African Americans to distance themselves from their African ancestors and embrace their white blood. However, point number 11, at the same time, they hold up African immigrants as a sort of ideal model citizens versus the no good, lazy American black in their view. Number 12, if he or she champions a states' rights concept over the federal government. Number 13, if he or she tends to advocate repeatedly for the Republican Party. 14, if he and she injects the issue of black females getting abortions to pretend concern for black life while at the same time referring to victims of police killings as thugs. Number 15, if he or she refers to the Chicago shootings and murders of blacks by other blacks as evidence that there's no police brutality. In other words, they know these statistics like baseball statistics. Number 16, he or she often use right-wing slogans, school choice, smaller government. These are some of the indicators that you might have an agent among you to steer black people to right-wing thinking and to justify the continuing repression of black people by racism. Well, these people are committing a type of black-on-black crime. And just like they themselves advocate that our young people should be hunted down like wild animals, then I think that these black people who are in our midst who advocate these points should be hunted down like wild animals because they're committing black-on-black violence.
Brother Warren, laid it down,
Stan. Oh, yeah, good food for thought. And it's so true. I mean, and this is something that, as he mentioned, it goes all the way back to the early days of the Black Panther Party. These individuals are so committed that they if they can't attack you from without, they got to come from within. We see that there are people who espouse this current administration to the extent that they feel that this here is the utopia, and that this, call it the liberal left, socialism. You got to use these cold words. A lot of cold words are being used today. But my brother, wake up. His program was powerful. What he spoke to us was the signs that we can observe and know when an ill-filled traitor is within our midst. Can't say it anymore. Can't say it anymore.
That's
better
true.
Than what he said. Thank you.
Hey, brother Warren. Real quick,
yes,
give
sir.
Your information on your show again. Definitely check him out. He has a great content. You can go into his archives. Great work. He's been doing it for a while. Give us your information, brother.
Yes, my show is called New Orleans Wake Up. And what my show does, it connects New Orleans to the larger issue of black survival in an intense global anti-African environment. So therefore, we provide a local, national, and pan-Africanist global critical analysis and commentary on a variety of subject matters and how they relate to the black experience. New Orleans, wake up.
All right. Thank you, brother. And I definitely want to see how we can collaborate, because we need to link these cities, particularly Richmond and New Orleans, because we know the slave trade ran through these cities.
That's right.
Really well.
Yes.
All right, brother.
That's
one.
Right.
Thank
New
you.
One of the
thank
largest.
You.
Right.
Man, that's hot. Thanks, Brother One. Hey, let's go over to 9282, Stan. It's on fire today. It's Empowerment Saturday, 365 days.
Great.
Marvin Ronan, Stan Macklin, 9282, you're live.
Good afternoon, brothers and sisters. Everyone's fine?
Everybody's
fine.
Good. I'm enjoying the conversation today, brothers. Enjoying the conversation, sisters. Look,
wonderful.
Let me interject this. I'm going to try to summarize everything I've heard and what's been said today this way.
Mm-hmm.
It is written somewhere, although I don't know where, that the devil said, I would rather rule in hell than to serve in heaven. Let's look at this. I'm going to start off and define what hell is. Webster says hell is another world, which means the underworld, in which the dead continue to exist. The dead continue to exist in hell. Another world, another realm of the devil and the demons in which condemned, and I added to it, or enslaved people, suffer everlasting punishment. A place or state of misery, torment, wickedness. A place or state of turmoil or destruction. It's also a place of unrestrained fun or supportiveness. Like they said, the kids were full of hell. An extremely unpleasant and often inescapable situation. And hell is sometimes also too referred as Hades, defined as the Greek gods of the underworld abode of the dead in Greek mythology. So hell is the world in which the dead continue to exist, the nether realm of the devil and the demons in which condemned or enslaved people suffer everlasting punishment. It's a place of misery, torment, wickedness, a place of turmoil or destruction, and extremely unpleasant and unescapable. Okay? It's what hell is. And the devil
Hey,
says,
brother, that sounds like somewhere off of 95. Right
I'm
there
telling
off
you,
of Chamberlain Avenue.
And the devil says, I would rather rule in hell than to serve in heaven. So what is heaven? Heaven is defined as the expansion of a space that seems to be over the earth like a dome, the dwelling place of the deity, God, and the blessed dead, a spiritual state of everlasting communion with God, a place or condition of utmost happiness, something that is very pleasant or enjoyable, a state of thought in which sin is absent and the harmony of divine mind is manifest. So the devil doesn't want to serve in a dwelling like this. That's with God. He doesn't want to serve in a spiritual state of everlasting communion with God, nor does he want to serve in a place or condition of utmost happiness, something that is very pleasant or enjoyable. Nor does he want to serve in a state of thought in which sin is absent and the harmony of divine mind exists. The devil don't want to serve, want to be there. He would rather rule in hell. You know what, though? Brothers and
sisters.
What's
that, brother?
We are so woolly lynched. We've been so destroyed on the plantation that we love hell. We don't want to leave it. We just want white people to treat us better in it. We just want to be considered equal in hell. Because if the truth be told, we love it. We love the strip clubs. We love the nightclubs. We love fornicating. We love the liquor stores. We love the whores. We love the coke. We love the uppers and the downers. We love getting drunk. We love everything about hell and everything that makes it hell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we also know that all the things, all the things that make up hell, we love them. We love them. That's why in our state of mind right now, in this slave mentality that we currently are in this country, the slave mindset is different from the devil. The devil says, I'd rather rule in hell than to serve in heaven. The slave says, I'd rather serve in hell than to rule in heaven. We don't want to go to heaven. Heaven to us gonna be boring. Ain't gonna be no crap games up there. Ain't gonna be no casinos up there. Ain't gonna be no liquor stores up there. Ain't gonna be no whores up there. Ain't gonna be no prostitutes up there. It ain't gonna be none of this hellish stuff that we so love. And we get to heaven, we probably gonna say, God, send me back to hell. Because we in love with the situation in which we in. Now, we've been forced and made to love it. That's what slaves do. That's what the destruction of the slave, the black mind, was to introduce us to and to create hell in us and to make us love hell. That's why the devil said, I'd rather rule in hell than to serve in heaven. And look how I got all y'all jumping. Y'all killing yourselves. Y'all pimping your women. You beating your women. You don't take care of your children. Brother Stan said earlier, the elders not respected by the youth because we haven't earned their respect. You know, we haven't taught them they're in hell. We haven't showed them how to get out of hell. We haven't told them nothing about what heaven is supposed to be within them. So they grow up and they rebel against us because we still, and I'm one of them elders. I tell the children at Armstrong all the time, when folks in my generation ask me or say to me, what's wrong with our youth? I say, look in the mirror. We what's wrong with them. For me to be an old, elderly black man, and I'm almost 70, to say that my youth don't respect me, I can't blame them. That's on me. I have let them down. So, yes, they're going to disrespect me. Not understanding all the depth that goes into that Willie Lynch thing that created that, but I let them down. We'd rather serve in hell than to rule in heaven. We can change it. We can bring heaven into existence because truly it's like the definitions say, it's just a state of mind. Heaven is a state of mind, as is hell. And right now, our state of mind is all about hell. All right.
I'm going to hold you right there, brother. Stan, I'm coming to you. Then I'm going back to Brother Warren, and then I'm going to work my way up the list. What you got? We are wallowing in hell, as the brother said. We've been Willie Lynched.
I appreciate caller. Whenever he calls in, he always has a good analytical twist or perspective that is good for food for thought, and I want to compliment him on that. Right, heaven and hell, as we know, can be states of mind. And the hellish state of mind, it is befitting to the extent where our people have no longer operate from their original position, and we have become so victimized that we perpetuate the components of white supremacy. It just naturally happens.
True.
I personally think that there is a kingdom. It's called the kingdom of God, that is the higher intelligence or power or reality that exists for us. And that's where I'm headed. When I expire out of this hellish atmosphere down here, I'm headed there. But in the meantime, I have to occupy till I come.
All the things
we heard today helps us to know how to make a difference down here. It can happen. When I looked on Ronka Wong, and it takes the time to go around those pyramids, that is amazing. That was done by brilliance. And if we can bring out the excellence in each of us as contributors of reality that defines our existence, that's what it's about. We spend so much time fighting the good fight of faith or the Willie Lynch mentality and the hellish environment that we lose track of what we are, builders.
That builder is the harmony of the divine mind coming out in man. I'm going to hold you right there, brother. I'm going back to the line. Right, and I'm going to just go up. So I'm going to start with Brother Warren. If you're there, Brother Warren, welcome to Back to Empowerment 365. What you got on that?
Well, you know, go back to what the sister who spoke before I first came on, where she said, you know, we don't take responsibility. I'm paraphrasing what she said. We shouldn't take responsibility for anything. We didn't do anything. We have to understand the propaganda that has been organized and implanted in our subconscious and consciousness on a daily basis. And so we have to really kind of put a hold on that propaganda where we are the problem, where we are lacking, we are immoral. That we kind of have to kind of reanalyze that, at least those of us who kind of feel that way. So we hear cliches like black-on-black violence. We hear cliches like we are our own worst enemy. That's part of a propaganda movement so that we buy into that, and then we're not capable of solving our problems because we've been made to believe we're somehow innately evil or immoral.
Thank you, brother. That's true. I'm going to 0946. You hold right there for me, Brother Warren. 0946, are you there?
I'm here. You know, one of the things that the brother was talking about, how we may love things about hell and it's been ingrained in us, but the power in that is that the fine line is we got to love our brother and sister enough to say, okay, you may like this hell, you may think this hell is for you, but because I believe in you, let me tell you who you are. When I worked in the school system, and I was with the district attorney's office, and we had a program called the Early Intervention Program, where we went into the elementary schools and we were starting to deal with kids that were already exhibiting delinquent behavior. One of the things that I had to do is I had kids that cursed, that were disrespectful, that were just obnoxious, that were just ridiculous. But here's the thing, is that those kids are instinctual, and there's one thing that they understood very quick. Do you really care about me? In my wrecking state, in my broken state, in my ridiculous state, do you care about me? So what I had to do with all of the disrespect in the beginning that those kids were exhibiting was that I didn't take it personal. I saw beyond that, and I began to tell them who they are. We are told so much of what we are not and what we don't do and what we bad at. We got to balance it out and begin to tell ourselves one to another that you are great. You are decent. You are respectful. You can do this. You are able to overcome this. And I think there's a balance that we have to have in that. You know, I had to acknowledge that they were disrespectful and I had to do things, but the thing that they needed to know was that I believed that they could do better. I believed
right.
that they could do better. So I didn't take it out. I said, these kids are kids. They're coming from a crazy environment. They're disrespectful
mm-hmm.
because they see disrespect. They're saying curse words because they hear curse words. And so I could have taken all of that personal. But I can say that once you begin to tell people who they really are, when the scripture
That's right.
says, my sheep will recognize my voice, when we begin to tell one another that we are kings and queens and that we are royalty and that we are good and that we are respectful, then I believe
on,
we will begin to hear that. It's just breaking that chain in the propaganda that has us so hard on one another. As Black people, we are so – we don't have compassion for one another. You know, I can't
you know
say
that.
I'm making
called?
A general statement. I don't mean that about
you know
every,
that's
everybody. I'm What?
That's called love, right? That's what that's called. We got to love each other again. And the passion that you had for those kids and the patience that you had with them was exhibiting the love that you need. I got to cut you right there, sister, because I got one more
okay.
to get to.
Okay.
8128. I'm going to keep you live, though. 8128. Come on in. You there, brother?
I'm here, brother.
All right. What you got? We got 3 minutes, so we got to make it short, get right to the point, and I'm going
to
try to clean this thing up and get up out of here.
Okay, brother. Well, let me say that when you're raised in an environment that breeds for you to disrespect each other, and that's what this white society has produced, in order for you to be shown as having anything, you got to have material values, and you move into these communities that don't care anything about you. And
mm-hmm.
your life is based on a material worth. that means something that we have been taught and shown through media of all kinds for the last few generations that means something, you know, that values. And when we don't live up to those standards, we are seen as lost. When we don't look at ourselves, like you say, love ourselves first and love who we are as a people. But first you must find out who you are. You know,
mm-hmm.
and that is something that has been deprived from us for some generations. But, you know, that whole initiative about integration and accepting the value of a white society has really, you know, really, really kind of reached havoc on us as a people. So us getting back to ourselves and getting back to what is important, who we are. Like they say, if you don't know your past, you cannot have a future. So you must know what your value is in order for you to be able to attain that value again. Study your history. Study your past. How we used to be as a family, as a group, as a society. Our towns being destroyed, you know, our societies, our Black Wall Street, all those things that we had are things that we must relive, revisit, and start to see ourselves as being as valuable as any other group on this planet.
True.
And that is
True.
Something that I think that we need to start to focus on. You know,
great
what
point,
our
brother.
True value
great
is
point. I'm going to have to hold you right there because we're running out of time, but thank you for that. That's great. Stan, man, this is great. I wish we had more time. All right, closing comments. He said we got to get back to ourselves. This was great. Play it back for yourself first, right, and then share it with a friend. Thanks, Brother Warren. Thanks for the team for calling in. And Stan, any closing comments before we get out of here?
I think we just have to look beyond our faults and see the need, and we need each other.
I like that. It's Empowerment Saturday, 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. Marvin Rohn and Stan Macklin. Join Brother Warren on Wake Up New Orleans. Go out there and find him. Go out to the archives, listen to some of the shows. Brother George has done an excellent series on what slavery did to us. We got part 11 this week going and pick that out. Find something. We got an eloquent history. All we have to do is do the work of working on ourselves. Love on each other. respect yourself, respect, and get back to loving each other. That's the way, right? We need to talk about the elephant in the room. We'll continue the work of doing the 365 Days of Empowerment Saturday. We love y'all. Keep it going, y'all. And, oh, well, our news
world's changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war, and poverty. Oh, wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. If we just let it be, na 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 na, the world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up, all the doubt.